This is the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers. Here's your host, Jessica Coody, and Husker Radio Network analyst, Jeremiah Searles.
Welcome back into the Sideline Slice, and welcome back, Jeremiah Searles. You had the week off last week, went a little elk hunting, and the people want to know, how did you do? Did you get one?
I did not, unfortunately, get one.
Again?
Again, I know. I had moments. I almost sealed the deal Sunday night. I had a big bull coming in. And he was closing, and then like 200 yards over in another draw, some monster bull just lets off this monster bugle and scared the other one away, and then he wouldn't come out. So it was frustrating, but Dad shot one at 31 yards, which was awesome to see him get one, and then he also shot a mule deer. So Dad was the killer of the group. He's still taking me to school every single year.
I was going to say, it seems like every year we come back, and you come back from this hunting trip, and your dad's got one, and you haven't.
It's
you should
crazy.
Maybe learn more from your dad.
He's the elk whisperer. I mean, he literally shot his out of serendipity. He was setting up to call for me at 5 o'clock in the evening, and he sat down on a stump for our 5 o'clock radio check. He was like, oh, this looks like a good stump to sit on at 4:57. He sat down, and then he's like, oh, that's an elk. Walked right in front of him at 31 yards, and he just crushed it. Like, we did radio check, like, hey, all clear here, all clear. He's like, hey, bull down over here. Like, what? Like, unbelievable. But, yeah, I mean, he's the elk whisperer. It's crazy.
And you and the family like to eat the meat, and the kids.
Yeah, so
the kids
Dad
are big
sent
fans,
me home,
right?
Yeah. Dad knows that his mom and him can't eat a whole elk or anything, so he took the best part. He took the back straps and then sent me home with the whole elk. So, and the deer. And so I actually butchered up the deer in the kitchen this morning, and then I got to go back upstairs this afternoon, this evening, and finish up the elk. So we do all our own processing. We cut it all up, do the roast, the grinding, the whole bit. So
what's the first recipe then you're going to make with it?
Oh, I love doing elk burgers. Elk burgers is one, like, my wife makes a mean roast. She makes a great elk roast in the crock pot, or I throw it on the smoker. But elk burgers with one egg and some breadcrumbs in there to hold it together with pure elk, it's power food.
Nice.
No, you don't eat meat. Never mind. I was like, I'll bring you some.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll try it.
It's clean. It's clean. I promise. I handled it from death to door. Death to door. It's with you.
Is elk considered red meat?
Yes, very much so.
Well, I don't eat red meat, so.
I know. That's why I stopped myself.
Okay, well, let's talk some football. Huskers, I get back in the win column, and a little bit of an odd first half. Really felt like Nebraska dominated the game, but it was 0-0 at the half. But find a way to win it 28-10 on the road, and get back in the win column. Just your take on watching the game and big positives that you took away from that one.
Yeah, the first half was just so confusing to watch. You're watching us move the ball up and down the field and then not putting it in the end zone, and then botched snaps and not good kicks. And, you know, you're just sitting there going, man, don't let this team hang around. It's not even close that we're the better team on the field right now. Like, it was so apparent on all two phases. The special teams wasn't much, but you're just going, okay, boys, don't do this, because you've been a part of it, and I've been a part of it, of going, if you let teams hang around, bad things can happen. And that was kind of how I felt going into half. Like, we've given these guys some life. But to watch us come out in the second half and to put 28 points on the board and to take the football away and to be very efficient in the run game and make big pass, like, that was where I was like, okay, we can still not play great football and not fall apart as a football team. And that's a step in a really big direction as a culture of this football team that needed to happen.
Yeah, and we heard Coach Rohl saying after the game, and then even the players had the kind of messaging too, that, hey, we're being told we can't win these close games, and here it is, 0-0, and we find a way. And to me, I thought it was good too. I mean, for as good as this team and as really explosive as they've been in first halves of games so far, that they found a way to get it going in the second half. I mean, you know, they were moving the ball, but you kind of put it all together more so in the second half. I think that's important, to put together a good second half, you know, and you can build off of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I find myself falling into this trap too, as most as Husker Nation runs. I mean, tell me at the beginning of the year where all of us are like, man, 6-7 wins would be awesome. Right, like, step in the right direction, showing growth in the second half, second year Matt Rohl. And then we get off to the hard start and everyone's like, why aren't we 7-0? Right. And I find myself into that too, of like, we're good enough to be 7-0, or we're good enough to find or be like, we're going to be 7-0 going into Ohio State, or whatever it might be, and we stumbled along the way. Let's not pretend that we're not still a young program developing under a new head coach, right? And so to see the growth from the loss to this week, bouncing back and struggling in the first half and bouncing and dominating a second half, that's just reconfirming and reaffirming everything that I need to know about Coach Rhule and what this program's about and how they're continuing step by step, day by day, to keep pushing in the right direction, and how one loss isn't going to derail that whole thing. Right, one overtime loss is not going to be the derailment of an entire season, when it easily can be a turning point for a season in a bad way. But seeing the way that this team responded and coming out last week, finding a way to win a game that was 0-0 at half and throwing a 28-burger and a half, I love that. It just, all arrows are trending in the right direction for me.
Well, since we've recorded a podcast together, Turner Corcoran goes down, out for a significant amount of time. Gunnar Gotula comes in, plays against Illinois, and then makes his first start at Purdue. And I love Coach Rhule was getting asked all these questions in the post game, and he goes, you guys aren't even asking me about Gunnar Gotula. To me, that's a great thing that no one even noticed him, that it was his first start and he held his own out there. What did you think of Gunnar and his first start?
Yeah, I paid a really close attention to him, and I think his pass protection was immaculate.
Wow.
I mean, for a young player to go out on the road, and I know I played at Purdue. It's not what I would refer to as a hostile environment. But to still go out on the road and not – I don't think he jumped off – did he jump off sides?
No, it was Ben Hart. It was Ben Hart, right?
Yeah, so not to jump off sides, to be technically sound. I mean, it just speaks a lot to Coach Raiola and his ability to develop and to have guys ready, even as young players. Because we talked about it on the Week Zero podcast. Eventually, we're going to need some of these young guys, right? They're going to need to come in, and it's why those early games was so important to get some reps, right? So that his first reps weren't against Illinois, and his first reps weren't his first start at Purdue. He's played in some meaningful games, and I thought overall he was a really bright spot at the left tackle spot for me, and I'm excited to see how he continues to grow.
Okay, and then, you know, in the run game, I know that's something that Coach Rhule's addressed. We want to be able to run the football. But, hey, they found a way to get it going in the second half. And how about the 1-2 punch of Emmett Johnson and Dante Dowdell, two of your favorites? And what does that provide a team when you have just maybe those two kind of completely different running styles and what they can provide for an offense?
Yeah, I love it. You know, watching the Lions game, Detroit Lions game last night, and they kind of have that 1-2 punch of Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, very similar in the way that I look at Dowdell and Emmett Johnson. One's the bell cow coming downhill, better buckle your chin strap or your helmet's coming off. And the other one's going to press to the edge, stop on a dime, and come back inside and take the distance with speed. And when you have that multiple 1-2 punch, it really keeps the defense on their heels on what are we expecting, what are we going to go, and then, oh, by the way, we have a quarterback that can play action and throw it really deep. And so I do still want more out of our run game. I want to see us be a more dominant run football team to set up the pass, where I feel it's been a little bit of pass to set up the run, and it's been working, but I do think that for long-term success in a long season, the teams that have better run games come November are usually the teams that are stacking wins in November, heading for conference championships and now a playoff spot. And I would love for us to get to that point, and Rhule knows it. He played 1 year in the Big Ten and understood it. It's just got to keep continuing to go, but relying on those two backs and back there and still having guys like Ramir Johnson and Gabe Irvin back there as well is just such a luxury to have, and we just have to continue to utilize those guys more and more in the run game.
How about, you know, Dylan Riley, you've protected a bunch of different quarterbacks, and his ability to identify and see when he can maybe take advantage of some pass interference calls. How special is that as a freshman for him to be able to recognize that and then be able to take advantage of it and put this offense in some good positions?
Yeah, it's next level type of thinking. To see a corner that is out of position and know that, hey, if I throw this ball on a back shoulder fade or I give it a high point for a guy like Nair to go up and get it, if this corner's out of position, he's not going to be able to get his head around, and maybe Nair catches it, and if worst case scenario, he's going to be face guarding him and into his body, and it's going to be a 15-yard PI. And that is the fact that he's 18 years old and processing information like that at real-time speed is incredible. Now, I will say, there are times when I see him back there backing up a little bit too far, like he's playing NCAA. Like, step up into the pocket and zip that thing in there a little bit instead of kind of backing up and fading away into it. That's a little bit of the progression that I would like to see out of him as a thrower. But his mental recognition is phenomenal, and I'm really excited for the future for him, obviously. I mean, every game I'm just going, how does he make some of these throws as an 18-year-old kid?
How about the defense? Feel like they were improved and put a better performance on tape than maybe the last time we saw him out there?
Yeah, I think that it was definitely more of a complete game from the defense, you know, overall. And taking, obviously, getting the big pick six at the end by Bullock is huge to help us in the turnover margin column. But I would like us to start being able to generate a little bit more of a pass rush on early downs, right? If it's first and second down and they want to throw the football, it seems like that quarterback's got a little bit too much time to sit in that pocket and go. And, you know, looking for guys like Williams and MJ Sherman and Jamari Butler and Ty to win a couple of those one-on-one matchups on first and second down to allow us to get into our third down pass rush sets with our smaller bodies and with our blitz schemes that Tony White has. That was really the one thing from defense that I looked at of, hey, let's generate a little bit more pass rush. But I thought the run game, I thought they did a great job. They were moving guys around. I mean, there was times I'm watching Nash loop out to the A gap, and here comes MJ Sherman into the B gap, and then all of a sudden this guy's looping out to the C gap, and you're like, how are you? This is hard to follow as a watcher. I couldn't imagine it being an offensive lineman out there against it. So love the scheme, love the way they're doing things, and I think that it was a nice bounce back week for them.
So Nebraska, the Blackshirts are one of just seven teams in college football that have not allowed a rushing touchdown this season. You know, they've continued to be one of the best teams, rushing defenses in college football. They were last year, they are this year. What is it about this front that is so hard to run the ball against?
Ty and Nash. I mean, that's the number one thing. I mean, you can have schemes all the live long days. And I mean, coaches say it all the time. It's not about the X's and O's. It's the Jimmies and the Joes. And we got a Jimmy and a Joe in there and Ty and Nash Hutmaker that just eat bodies. I mean, they just eat up double teams that allows our linebacking core to get downhill and to make negative plays and to meet running backs in the holes. And if you can't appreciate the dirty work that those two guys do in the middle, you won't understand why this defense is being so good, because that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. That doesn't show up in the highlights. It doesn't show up at all. All it does is show up on Sunday morning when they're sitting in the cold tub because they're so dang sore. But those two guys on the interior do such a great job of plugging up those offensive linemen, not allowing them to climb up on the linebackers and the DBs, that allows them to shoot their guns and go get it. Those two guys are doing phenomenal in the run game.
Okay, so obviously one of the issues last week against Purdue was the field goal unit. And missed a field goal, then had a couple of bad snaps. They switched the snapper, you know, into the game, and they've made changes there throughout the season. You know, you've blocked next to snappers, right? I mean, how do you fix that when they're saying that it's been good in practice? The field goal or the extra point, that unit hasn't had any issues. So I guess how do you fix that, the issues with the snapping and the field goal unit, you know, at this point in the season?
I think it's really just making a change. You know, you can only look at things so often and go, how many more times do I have to look at this before it's my fault for putting a guy out there and putting the team at risk? And so sometimes you just have to make a change and see what happens. And obviously with the change they made at the snapper position, it worked out better. But I've seen the snapping being an issue since week one.
Yeah, no, I think both snappers have had issues.
Both snappers have had issues since week one. Right? I mean, the blocked kick against Colorado was because of a poor snap, right? A couple of these missed kicks, I don't think you can put all on the kicker because the timing is off, because it's a high snap, a low snap, and the kicker's in a hitch and his giddy up. You know, all of it starts with the ball coming from the snapper, and it's nothing you really think about until it's a problem. Right, no casual fan watches an extra point and goes, man, I hope this snap gets there on time. Right, like it's always about, oh, is this kicker lined up or whatever it is. But you have to make sure that everything functions properly. The operation, as we refer to it, the operation of the snap, hold, kick, has to be flawless. It has to be flawless. It has to be as simple as breathing for those guys in order to make it easy, because if that's an issue and then you add the high pressure situation of a kick in a live game, that's when things start to go awry. So it's just going to continue to do more and more reps, continuing to find the right rotation and the right bodies that can operate on a high level week in and week out.
How does that change the approach and mindset of an offense and an offensive coordinator when you've seen multiple issues like that in a game, like throughout the course of a game, but then also maybe even throughout the week game planning when you've seen those issues? How does that affect, I guess, the overall approach and mindset of that?
It's so hard, because points are always a premium. And you never want to be like, man, it's 4th and 5 on our own 18 and we didn't convert and we have 3 points here. Or do we? It's such a hard thing, because you don't want to just completely lose faith in your kicker and be like, we're going for it every time, like, just so you're aware, because you can't kick it through those yellow upright thingies, right? You can't do that to a kicker, because then you're just going to ruin his mental psyche even more, and you're going to need him at one point. You can't go for it on every 4th down. It's not smart. You have to take the points when the points are available. And so I think that even, you know, if it's a 4th and 8 from the 40 or a 35 and it's going to be a long field goal, you probably see more of an aggressive approach on 3rd down to get us to a chance where we can go for it on 4th down. You know, but I do think that it just comes in. You have to keep trusting your guys. You have to keep trusting that they're going to get it right, that they're going to get it fixed, because you cannot just take points off the board because you failed to convert a 4th down when you're in field goal range.
Valentino's, treasured Italian family recipes passed down for generations. Valentino's has become Nebraska's classic Italian tradition and proudly served in Memorial Stadium for over 30 years.
Okay, let's look ahead now. Rutgers back at home. This has been just such a strange schedule, I guess, for me, because just one road game and back at home, had the 4 to open up, but I guess just getting back to the matchup with Rutgers, we've heard a lot. They obviously are really good in red zone defense, but just what little you've seen of Rutgers so far, what's your take on this matchup?
You know, I think it's a very well-coached football team. You know, they do a great job of playing within their scheme, allowing things to come to them, and they don't beat themselves. And that's how you become a 4-0 football team. You know, it's really easy to be a 2-2 football team if you're making mental errors and you're turning the football over and you're beating yourself. But this is a team that's going to make us earn it against them every single play on offense, defense, and special teams, because they're going to be on their P's and Q's and their coach is going to have them in the right positions. So I think this is a great test for the Huskers. You know, you get beat in Illinois, go on the road, win a big one. Now you come back home. How do you respond to situations? We're still learning about this football team from a response standpoint, right? They started 3-0. They were handling winning well. They got punched in the mouth in overtime. Okay, they came out, stopped, bad start in Purdue on offense. Okay, they pour it on. I'm more worried about the Huskers than I am Rutgers. Like, I'm more worried about, what does this team look like coming out of the tunnel? Is there energy? Is there juice? Is everyone going to be locked in and dialed in coming off, so that what happens against Illinois doesn't happen again? If we can go out and handle that, I think this is going to be a great football game. It's going to be a dogfight. I think it's going to be probably a one-possession game, and I think this is the game that the Huskers can finally turn that tide of those close-score games, because I don't think either team's running away with this one.
You know, Coach Rule had talked about with Rutgers, they've got a lot of old guys that have played a lot of football for Rutgers. They're not going to come in here scared or be intimidated by the environment, where that can be, you know, a factor for some teams. He said he doesn't feel like it probably won't be for Rutgers. So, you know, when you start to become a team that, you know, Nebraska is, now they're getting some attention and they were in the top 25. Now they're still receiving votes, and you've got these teams now that they're no longer overlooking Nebraska, or, hey, that's an easy win. How does that change, you know, again, just the mindset as a player, knowing that, hey, we're no longer going to be overlooked when we step out on this football field?
Yeah, it's a great place to be. You want that as a player. You never want to be looked at as the trap game. Right, like Vanderbilt this week. Alabama put out a bunch of mouse traps all over the locker room because they're like, oh, a trap game. Like, if you're Vanderbilt, you're like, oh, damn it, I don't want to be a trap game. Right, like, you don't want that as your MO as a team. You don't want to be known as like, hey, we can't let up because we should beat these guys. You want to be known as, hey, we got to go into Nebraska against a very good football team, and we can't beat ourselves or they're going to beat the crap out of us. And that's where this Nebraska team is headed. they're headed for that, and Rule's got them on the path to that. It's about executing on a week-in, week-out basis. So it's a great place to be as a player. You want that pressure. You want that acknowledgement because it means you're doing all the right things. You're winning football games. You're practicing the right way. You're doing everything right, and you're giving yourself an opportunity to go out every single Saturday and win a football game.
It's funny that you had mentioned I'm more worried about Nebraska and what the Huskers look like in this matchup than Rutgers. It's no disrespect to Rutgers by any means, but
not at all.
It's what this team is doing too. I just sat down with MJ Sherman. He said the same thing. You know, it's yes, we are looking at film and we're scouting and whatnot, and we're preparing for this team, but we got to do what we do best. So what issues or where are you looking for this defense to maybe improve and be better from even, you know, the games prior? And then, you know, offensively too, where can they be better? Because I feel like the offense has had a lot of bright spots. So I guess for both sides of the football, where are you looking? Where can they improve and continue to get better?
Yeah, you know, the thing that killed us against Illinois specifically was not getting off the field on third down. You're doing the right things and then letting them convert third downs and through the air, being in third and three and not being in a great spot to stop them on a third down. So I'd love to see this defense just continue to get some three and outs and to get off the field and not allow a long drive and flip the field on us and make our offense have to go the long way. You know, so that's the big piece on the defense. And then on the offense, I just would love us to see more of a rhythm. More of a rhythm and not as much like relying on a big chunk play to keep a drive alive because it's third and nine, but to have a rhythm and to see Satterfield go through his openers and have a plan of how he wants to attack this defense early in the first quarter and get them on their heels, and then he's the one dictating the tempo of the plays and do we run hurry up, do we huddle, are we taking a shot, are we running the football? And that just comes with starting fast and being in a good rhythm offensively, which I just feel at times haven't been there. It's been kind of clunky cogs in the machine, and there's a negative play here and then a big play and then a negative play and then a big play instead of just constant smooth operation up and down the field.
You mentioned the third down for the defense. That was an area that Coach Rule had talked about. He had mentioned it at halftime and then you know, post game too, just the third down, the offense was not as good on third down as they have been. What for an offense that has been pretty solid or pretty good on third down, for them to all of a sudden not have a good game in third down situations? Why is that, and is it an area of concern at all moving forward?
You know, everyone loves to talk about third down, myself included, but third downs are created because you don't win first downs. You know, you don't get in front of the sticks on first down, and now you're in second and 10 or second and nine, and now you're forced to make a decision as a play caller. Do I run the football here to get us to try and get in third more manageable? Do I try and take a chunk out of this to get in third and short? And you're trying to be in between, where if you get a very positive play on first down where you're at first and or second and five or second and four, and now the whole playbook's open because you have two shots to get this thing, that's how you become really good third down teams. It's not converting every third and long and going there. And it's also about skipping some third downs, converting on second down so you don't have a third down every single drive, every single time with the change. You're not going first down, second down, third down. Skip some of those third downs. But so much of it is winning first down, which we didn't do a great job in the first half last week, but I thought we did a very good job of in the second half.
Okay, let's get to some keys for this week. What are you looking at for the Huskers to be able to pull out another win this week?
You know, number one for me this week is limit the penalties. Oh, my gosh. I mean, that game last week was absurd for both teams. But, I mean, it seems like across all of football right now, college, NFL, the penalties are rampant. These refs want to hear their names called, and they want to get up there and flex their muscles and first down or whatever it is, right? So let's just clean up our hands and be really disciplined in our techniques this week, and let's win the penalty battle because I think that's hurt us in the past. So that's going to be my first key this week. My second key is going to be run the football. Control the clock, run the football, Dowdell, Emmett Johnson, put it on the guys up front. Allow them to get some really lean on these guys for four quarters and don't get bored if it has success. And I'm talking to Satterfield here. Don't get bored if it has success, because offensive coordinators, every single one I've ever played for in my life, if they're running the football effectively, there's this little piece in their brain that's like, I should throw it. I should throw it. I think I should throw it, right? Don't get bored with it. If it's working and you're leaning on these dudes and they're going for it, just keep pushing, keep pounding, keep going, because those are really going to pay off for us in third and fourth quarter as we go. And then on the third key again is just going to continue to take the football away. Continue to take the football away on defense. Continue to find ways to be aggressive when you want to and get some sack fumbles, and then forcing him to throw it early into good coverage. You know, taking the football away is going to be big at home, because, you know, nothing fires up a crowd more like a turnover and then a quick change of possession to allow our offense to have a short field. You know, those type of plays are what win you Big Ten football games in October and November. So we're just continuing to see the aggressive approach from Tony White and this defense of getting after the football.
How about Huskers being +5 in turnover margin?
I love it. I cannot remember the last time we had a +5 turnover margin, but it's one of the reasons we're 3-1. It's so easy to be 1-3 if you flip that number. If you're -5 in the turnover margin, you're probably staring 1-3 right in the face.
Real quick, I did want to go back to the penalties part of it, because, I mean, you had said it's an issue. We've seen it, and now it's been back-to-back weeks, and then you also talk about getting into a rhythm. But when it – refs are calling it like that, how does a football team change that and manage that in game?
You just have to be more disciplined. It just comes down to, there's going to be bad calls in every game. It's going to happen. It's human nature. It's human error. The refs are human too. But if they're calling it that tight and they're keeping things that high, you just have to be so disciplined in your technique that it doesn't matter. You can't hold a guy if your hands are inside. You can't block a guy in the back if you can read his nameplate. If you're a DB, you got to know, I got to get my head turned around when the ball's in the air, right? There's so many of these things that happen that you can eliminate with proper technique.
Okay, let's get to your players to watch. First of all, before that, the last time you were on, your player to watch was Jamal Banks. Mm-hmm. You nailed it. Jamal mm-hmm. Banks has now had back-to-back weeks that he's been really big for this offense. So kudos to you. You called your shot there. Jamal Banks had a big day against Illinois and then also last week against Purdue. So who are you looking for on the offensive side of the ball for your offensive player to watch?
Yeah, you know, the guy that I want to see get going a little bit more, and you've seen more of it, is Fedoni. I think that him and Rayola are starting to develop a really nice connection. He's starting to trust him more of that big body over the middle to throw the ball to. So I'd love to see him have a monster game. You know, I think because of Banks and Nair's success that they've had over the last few weeks, that Rutgers is going to key on those guys and put some safety help over the top of them to make sure that they aren't ripping off the top of the defense. Well, that leaves a lot of middle ground there for Fedoni to get in behind those linebackers and have some success in the intermediate passing game, which Satterfield hopefully deals up for Rayola.
Dylan said that too. We got to get him more involved. So there you go.
He's a threat. A threat. You know, a good tight end is a quarterback's best friend.
Okay, well, how about defense? Who's your defensive player to watch?
You know, Malcolm Hartsock is a guy that I want to continue to watch, because he is starting to get more balls thrown his way, but he is phenomenally at tackling right now. I feel like I've used phenomenal a lot today. He's done a really nice job at tackling. You know, I think that for me, anytime I look at a corner, yeah, can you cover? But when it gets down to it and that running back's bouncing that inside zone out to the corner and you're the last man in defense, what are you about? Is this where it's going to be a business decision? Are you going to put your nose in there and go make the tackle? And I think we're going to need those perimeter players a lot this week in the run support to get up there and make sure nothing's bouncing outside. And if a running back wants to bounce outside and go one-on-one with the corner, it's got to be a tackle for a loss.
The other adjective that you used, not phenomenal, it was immaculate when you were describing Gunnar Gatula's pass protection.
You know, I'm just a thesaurus today. I'm just all about it.
Just all the big words.
I'd win Scrabble.
All right. Well, hopefully, again, we'll be talking about another win, because you haven't talked about a loss, because you were off last week. So we had Tommy Armstrong.
I just decided I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to deal with the loss. Did someone fill my shoes?
Tommy Armstrong.
Did you get replaced?
The QB stepped in for you. Tommy did.
Okay, that's all right. That's good. At least someone I know and trust.
Yeah. So, you still have not talked about a loss, so let's just keep it rolling. So you and Greg are both undefeated still.
I love it. Me and Greg, let's roll.
You're not undefeated in your picks this week.
Yeah, that was a tough one. You know, I just blindly picked those from the deer blind or the elk blind, so I can't be blamed for that or held accountable for my actions.
All right, we'll see if you can bounce back. You've said that every week for 6 weeks now. We'll see if you can bounce back this week. Appreciate it, buddy.
Absolutely. Go Big Red.
He's Jeremiah Searles of Justin Cootie. This has been the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers.
Valentino's, a slice of home you just can't get anywhere else. What started with a treasured family recipe has become a Nebraska tradition for over 65 years. Proud to be the official pizza of the Huskers.